Even as Wall Street lent millions to WeWork, internally, bankers were concerned.
Wall Street financing really powered this company, and it was its lifeblood in a lot of ways.
And China claims that tariffs will go, but U.S. doubts remain.
One of the unusual things about this is that the U.S. hasn't responded in an official capacity.
Plus, lassoing the bull. New York City says it plans to move the famous Charging Bull statue. This is What's News from The Wall Street Journal. I'm Kim Gittleson. Let's get started. Now, before we take a look at the role that Wall Street played in lending money and credibility to WeWork, here's what you missed. We've been telling you this week about a potential thaw in the trade war between the U.S. and China. The Chinese government said yesterday that as part of a phase one deal between the two countries, some tariffs could be lifted. But now we're reporting that there are doubts about whether both parties have agreed to the rollback. From Washington, Josh Zimbrun has more.
We've talked to a number of people, of U.S. officials and people who are close to the talks, and we think there's a difference of opinion. There's some people who want to continue to be much harder on China, who do not want to see these tariffs taken off quite yet. There's people who are eager to see a deal be made. You know, there's also people who want to be tough on China, but believe that the tariffs are taking a toll on the U.S. economy. And one of the things that everyone keeps coming back to is that, you know, this deal is not, nothing is really agreed to until there's signatures on the paper.
On Fox Business Network, President Trump's senior trade advisor, Peter Navarro, denied that there was a deal that involved tariffs.
There is no agreement at this time to remove any of the existing tariffs as a condition of the phase one deal. And the only person who can make that decision is President Donald J. Trump, and it's as simple as that.
We'll have more on the market reaction to the potential Phase 1 trade deal later in the show. But first up, a few more stories. Disney reported its earnings after the bell yesterday. Although profits slumped, mostly due to investment in its streaming service, Disney+, investors were pleased with the performance of its movie division. Revenue there rose by 52%, helped by movies like The Lion King and Toy Story 4. Shares in the company were up over 5% in after-hours trading. And Gap CEO Art Peck is stepping down effective immediately. Yesterday, the company warned of another quarter of weak sales and lowered its profit targets for the year. Gap's struggled for years as some of us shifted to shopping at fast fashion chains like Zara and H&M. In February, Mr. Peck said the company would spin off Old Navy, which has surpassed Gap in terms of sales, into a separate company. Gap said that Robert Fisher, who's the son of Gap founders Doris and Don Fisher, would fill in as temporary CEO. Now, our main story this morning. It has to do with WeWork. But this time, we're not going to be looking at co-founder Adam Neumann's behavior or SoftBank's role in funding the company's rise. Instead, we're going to turn to Wall Street. We're reporting that part of what fueled WeWork's rise was access to large loans from institutions like JP Morgan and Wells Fargo. But even as the banks lent millions internally, they worried about the We company. Charlie Turner has been finding out more from David Benoit.
David, WeWork's rise and fall was pretty dramatic. What happened to the office space leasing company? I mean, it was a Wall Street darling with major banks jockeying for a role in the company's IPO, lending it hundreds of millions of dollars.
Sure, yeah. I mean, certainly I think when a company loses $40 billion in valuation, there's a lot of blame to go around. What we've been looking at recently is sort of in the rise section of that narrative, how Wall Street financing really powered this company, and it was its lifeblood in a lot of ways, in a way that we haven't really explored before.
Well, what about the conflict between the banks basically building up this company and questions about its money and also its business model?
So what we found was that inside the banks, on their lending side, they were pledging these large lines of credit to WeWork, $500 million and $650 million, and then they had struck this deal at the IPO over $6 billion in debt. A huge loan, really, on any scale for a company like this. But internally, they were actually pretty concerned about it. We have reporting back through 2017 of banks blanching at the model that WeWork was doing, at its cash flow, and saying, well, hold on a second. If we're going to give you money, we're going to need, one, a lot of protection that you're going to pay this back. And you know what? We're going to need a lot of fees. So that $6 billion came with $250 million of fees.
Okay, well, that was the fees end of it. But what about the money end of it on WeWork's part? It was chronically bleeding cash.
Right, right. Their model was to essentially bleed cash. They willfully did not make money while they grew. WeWork's rise was really fueled by these bank lines of credit. So the way the company works is it goes to a landlord and signs a long-term lease. The landlords at the beginning need a bank letter. It's just like when you rent an apartment, you might need a guarantee for a few months up front. So the way we were structured this was they went to the banks and they got these big pots of money and they took parts of those and would send them out as letters and they'd come back. And that was how WeWork was able to grow at such a rapid rate. Even though it wasn't bringing in cash, it didn't actually need the cash to grow. It needed these bank financing letters.
Why don't you talk about Wells Fargo and their role?
Sure. So Wells Fargo is an interesting player in this because they're not typically known as a Silicon Valley type bank. They're not typically the big IPO bank. They got involved in 2017. And what our reporting turned out was actually kind of a big deal inside Wells Fargo. And they got pretty worried. And what they were worried about the cash flow of the company, and they were worried about Mr. Newman and his personality, essentially. And so we heard that the loan went through several kind of rounds of appeals and got rejected internally by the bank and ultimately had to be signed off on by a top executive. And that just shows, that's just one example we think of showing inside the banks, there were actually legitimate concerns about what was going to happen to WeWork that weren't really portrayed out externally until the IPO fell apart.
Then where did things start to go sour for WeWork as it approached its IPO date or its planned IPO date?
Sure. So the banks are giving up all this money and are trying to help take it out public to investors. And that's when it starts going sour. They put out the prospectus that details what WeWork is and all of its dealings. And investors say, well, we're not comfortable with that. Somewhat echoing what we had found out the banks had been internally saying, when's this company going to turn a profit? When are we going to be able to reap some of the rewards of WeWork? And investors said, we're not buying this at the valuations you think it's worth.
You can find David's article with Maureen Farrell and Liz Hoffman up on WSJ.com. On to markets. As promised, we're going to return to the potential Phase 1 trade deal. U.S. stocks rose yesterday as investors cheered signs of progress. But instead of equities, let's take a closer look at government debt. We saw that yields around the world began rising in the wake of the Chinese government's announcement. Alex Frangos explains just why that's so interesting.
Yeah, I mean, we're basically seeing bond yields rise. And it was just a few months ago that markets were completely obsessed with the huge stock of negative yielding bonds in the world, especially in Europe. You had globally something like $17 trillion worth of bonds in the world had a negative yield, meaning if you were the investor, you had to pay the borrower. Now that's all reversing. France has positive yields again. Belgium has positive yields. German yields are at their highest level since July, and that's feeding through to U.S. yields, where the U.S. 10-year U.S. Treasury is now at 1.9%. And this is all because you have huge relief in three key areas. U.S.-China trade talks are going well. The economy in general is doing better than people thought. And then lastly, Brexit, which was hanging over markets, has kind of been put on pause. No one's really expecting a hard Brexit right now. You have the UK election, which is uncertain, but not really a big deal for global markets.
And here's what else we're paying attention to today. We could see a new late entrant to the crowded Democratic presidential field. The former New York City mayor, Mike Bloomberg. His advisor, Howard Wolfson, said that Mr. Bloomberg was considering a run out of concern that none of the current candidates could beat President Trump. Mr. Wolfson said Mr. Bloomberg was making preparations to appear on Alabama's primary ballot. However, people familiar with Mr. Bloomberg's plans told us he hasn't made a final decision just yet. Massachusetts Senator Elizabeth Warren welcomed Mr. Bloomberg to the race and referred him to her campaign's calculator for billionaires. Finally, New York City's famous Charging Bull statue will soon be rounded up and moved to a new location. It's currently located on a busy part of Broadway in Bowling Green Park in Lower Manhattan. City officials say they want to move the crowds that gather around the statue away from the location due to security concerns. The plan is to place it near the New York Stock Exchange, although a spokesman for the city said the plans were still being finalized. Fun fact, The statue was initially installed by the sculptor Arturo Domotica in front of the stock exchange as a Christmas gift to the city in the middle of the night in December 1989. But executives at the New York Stock Exchange, well, they didn't like the present, and they quickly paid to haul the 7,000-pound statue to a lot in Queens. Mr. Domotica worked with the Parks Department to have it reinstalled at its current location. He objects to having the statue moved. That's what's news from the Wall Street Journal. Thanks for listening and have a great weekend.